This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Chris Hornbecker, who's the president of Xtility and a senior consultant from Xtility. His name is Stephen Heister. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning, John. Thanks for having us today.
Good morning.
You know, one of the fastest selling servers in the history of Microsoft is a product called SharePoint. I thought it'd be appropriate to bring in a couple world-famous experts on the topic of SharePoint and have a discussion about a whole wide range of SharePoint, everything from large installations to mobile to security and FISMA compliance. And that's why I brought in the folks from Xtility. They have a very strong record in the federal government for helping out agencies make the transition from complex SharePoint to simplifying it and from taking SharePoint from a basic application and scaling it up to the stars. But before we begin, there are some listeners that are scratching their head going, well, how do these guys wind up working with SharePoint? Maybe, Chris, you can tell the listeners here a little bit about your background and how you wound up becoming an expert in SharePoint.
Sure, John. Well, my background, I started years ago with Anderson Consulting, doing a lot of large IT transformational work. Have built several software companies in the Microsoft arena, and the latest company we are specializing in helping government achieve transformational results through collaboration and workflow solutions.
Collaboration, boy, that's a hot topic. Steve, how'd you wind up with Xtility?
Well, you know, it's interesting, very much that collaboration topic. I got into SharePoint to solve a single problem back in the small business server days, and that one problem kind of rolled into a whole suite of collaboration tools and solutions, and started working with Chris several years ago, doing platform support for .NET applications, specifically SharePoint, and transitioned from there.
And speaking of SharePoint, you share some of your expertise at local meetings of SharePoint professionals, is that right?
That's true. Yeah, I am starting to get more involved in the SharePoint community, which is very strong. I'm going to be speaking fairly soon at the SharePoint Saturday, the conference, which is August 12th.
So you can probably Google that and come up with information on attending, is that right?
Absolutely.
SharePoint Saturday is great. The company's Xtility, Xgility.com, Xtility, for more information. So Chris, if you walk into any given federal agency and swing a dead cat, you're probably going to hit a SharePoint server. I mean, it seems to be everywhere and all kinds of rumors about what it can do, what it can't do. Give us a good definition of SharePoint. Some people say you get eight people, get eight different definitions. How would you define SharePoint?
Well, John, I'd agree with you. If you do speak with eight people, you may get eight different types of definitions. SharePoint can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. You know, some people use it to deploy collaboration portals. Some people use it for business process and workflow systems. Enterprise search is a great capability that SharePoint can present to your organization. As you may know, one of the most famous content management systems on SharePoint is Treasury.gov. And others use it as an application platform. So we believe it's a single point of access for your worker or information worker to start their day.
Stephen, is it still true that Microsoft.com is the largest SharePoint deployment in the world? Or maybe there's bigger ones than that?
Gosh, I think it swings back and forth between Microsoft.com and Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola, I know, has a very large SharePoint deployment as well.
Good. So, Chris, from your perspective, SharePoint can be used for a wide range. I guess it's like a Swiss Army knife, a lot of different applications. What kind of applications have you seen? What kind of problems have you seen SharePoint solve for federal agencies?
I think some of the most important problems that that can be solved in the federal space really are increasing collaboration. In addition, you know, you can help knowledge capture of your experienced workforce with dashboards and KPI systems. We can help agencies increase transparency, and you know, the biggest point that, you know, we mentioned earlier was single point of access for your information worker to start their day.
You know, knowledge capture has got to be interesting. I am a lot older than these two gentlemen here, and I can see people my age maybe retiring in the federal government with some knowledge that they may have. And if I leave an agency, what happens to all that formal, informal knowledge I have? SharePoint can actually help in that transition, can't it?
Yes.
Great, great. Stephen, when it comes to different agencies using SharePoint for all kinds of applications, it's not just limited desktop computers. You can also use it for mobile devices, too. Is that right?
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of Microsoft's goals, is really to be able to deliver a single interface or single operating system across multiple devices. And SharePoint plays a key role in that. You know, SharePoint as both an application delivery platform and also as a collaboration platform allows you to increase collaboration across tablets and mobile devices, your desktop and laptops as well.
In the commercial world, there's a concept called BYOD, bring your own device. And so if I work for an agency, and as I said many times, a bozo like me walks into your office and says, hey, Stephen, I want to use my iPad. Can I use it with SharePoint, or can SharePoint be used to control the security for that device?
Oh, you know, it's interesting. Some agencies are calling that BYOD, and some have been referring to it actually as shadow IT, which is the concept that your workers are going to go out and they're going to use their own devices, and they're going to use cloud-based services. They're going to use Google Docs. They're going to use their own cell phone at work. They're going to use flash drives and things like that to continue working and get their jobs done, whether you want them to or not. SharePoint has a number of offerings, both on being able to provide resources outside of the corporate network infrastructure, but also being able to edit documents using Office web apps and using tools that allow you to access information, edit information, and restore it back to corporate infrastructure, keeping all of that information within IT's jurisdiction.
Chris, a very well-known fellow by the name of Vivek is about to head north to Boston at Harvard University, and he is pushing the federal government into the areas of cloud. He talks about cloud first, open data, and transparency. 1, 2, 3, SharePoint seems to fit some of those requirements, doesn't it?
It definitely does. And, you know, we're seeing across the federal government SharePoint being deployed internally. We're also seeing it being deployed out into Microsoft's data centers with their Office 365 and BPOS initiatives. And we're also seeing SharePoint deployed in third-party clouds, such as Amazon's Enterprise Services. Department of Treasury, I believe, has actually deployed it out there.
That's the most fascinating aspect of it. I would think that if you have a SharePoint installation, you'd want to keep it on the Microsoft cloud. But it's so flexible, it can work on products like Amazon.com, huh? AWS. We're going to have them in the studio in about 2 weeks. From the perspective of security, when we talk about transparency and openness, that's one thing. But transparency and security don't seem to get along. Does Microsoft SharePoint address any of those issues, Steve?
Yes, it does. I mean, and transparency is an interesting issue, because you need to have transparency, but it needs to be voluntary transparency. You can't have a kind of forced transparency by having security leaks and things like that. And SharePoint really does help in that space. The whole Microsoft platform, we've had a lot of experience deploying UAG, which is Microsoft's Unified Access Gateway, to publish secure extranets and allow partners and allow external users to access information. Microsoft's also addressing a lot of that using federated services in order to kind of bridge connections securely between deployments and between the cloud and internal deployments.
And that was a case. I was at a breakfast this morning, and I heard a fellow from an agency talk about an internal deployment of SharePoint and an outward-facing deployment of SharePoint. So SharePoint has the flexibility to allow for the controls for both access characteristics.
Yeah, we've seen deployments both internally to support collaboration and document management and workflow and business processes. And we've seen extranets to support more public information, getting information out to external stakeholders. And we've also seen public sites built on SharePoint. People are using SharePoint purely for its web content management features.
Now, content management, storage, mobile, so many different aspects of that. I think we'll take a break, Chris. When we come back, we'll talk more about using SharePoint for more than just a file cabinet, using it maybe in business process management, and see how it can work with transparency and opening up information for citizens. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Chris Hornbecker. He's the president of Xgility, and Stephen Heister, senior consultant at Xgility.
Family Stories from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicola Scarlo with HHS HealthBeat. When the whole clan is over for a summer party, what do people talk about? Not uncommonly, themselves and each other. So let's see if we can put some of this information share to good use by getting together a family health history. A record of people's health conditions and where they are in the family tree can give doctors clues about possible inherited health problems. Dr. Griffin Rogers is director of the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases. So he knows how diabetes and some kidney diseases could run in families.
Most people with type 2 diabetes have a family member with the disease. If left untreated, diabetes can lead to serious health problems, including heart disease, blindness, loss of limb, kidney failure, and early death.
Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicola Scarlo.
For over 40 years, ManTech employees have been solving complex problems for the national security community. Whether they're providing secure satellite communications to the Department of Defense or investigating threats in cyberspace for intelligence agencies, their work is distinguished by high ethical standards and a deep commitment to their customers' success. They've created a culture that encourages individuals to bring innovative ideas and technology to those charged with protecting the homeland. Due to the high demand for ManTech skills and expertise, they have tremendous career opportunities for cleared, highly skilled IT professionals. Security experts, intelligence analysts, engineers, and technicians. In 2010, ManTech was selected for Fortune Magazine's 100 Fastest Growing Companies list, named a top 10 best employer for veterans by Military Times Edge Magazine, and for the fourth year in a row, was selected as a top 10 military-friendly employer by GI Jobs Magazine. Apply for openings today at mantech.com/careers. That's mantech.com/careers. ManTech is an equal opportunity employer. Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Becerro as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit myvillagegreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Megafood and Gero Formulas.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Chris Hornbecker and Stephen Heister. They both work for Xgility, and they've been involved in a wide range of SharePoint installations for the federal government. We're talking about every aspect of SharePoint this morning. Chris, let me ask a question here. Let's say you're an agency and you're trying to deploy a SharePoint installation and you work with a federal contractor. You just call them up and say, hey, give me a SharePoint developer? Or, I mean, what exactly is a SharePoint developer?
Well, it's funny you ask that, John. I get those type of calls quite often. And the problem with SharePoint staffing is there's really not a one-size-fits-all model. SharePoint requires a great deal of various types of resources to make the project successful. That goes from business analysts to SharePoint administrators to SharePoint developers, clear out to business program managers that are dedicated to the success of deploying SharePoint.
I would imagine there are people who have expertise with using forms like InfoPath, and another set of skills completely for ease of use with an external facing SharePoint site.
Sure. Typically, the person that's going to be doing an InfoPath engagement would be somebody that's really strong and solid with business process automation. Somebody that may be doing front-end interfaces would really be what you would call user interface or user experience designer.
Steve, I'm sure that many people are listening. They're saying, oh, SharePoint, we know what that is. That's a big file cabinet. And we just put our files in there, we check them out, check them in. But Chris just touched on business process management. I think this is one of the tools that people are starting to discover with SharePoint is that it can be used for typical business processes in an agency. Is that right?
Yeah, and what I've seen is that usually people adopt SharePoint in phases. And phase one is usually, you know, we've got this thing out there and we're putting documents in it, you know, and then they start to learn about check-in, check-out. They start to learn about versioning. They start to learn about some of the other features in SharePoint. And they kind of graduate from that first phase. And then they get into this idea now, hey, this is a business process tool. We can create, for example, as you mentioned, an InfoPath form, and we can put some intelligence behind it. We can route it for approval. We can route a document for approval. We can integrate SharePoint with our existing information rights management systems. We can integrate it with our existing digital certificates or digital signing systems. And then you start to move into, you know, even a higher level of the business. You start to learn, you know, move into dashboards and KPIs and business intelligence reporting. And then, you know, I mean, people take the next logical step. They start looking at, hey, how can I integrate my existing line of business applications into this single interface, this single point of access for our users?
When you think of systems integration, many people working on different documents and workflow business processes, I guess the big word is collaboration. And what many of my listeners may be tasked with is documenting how SharePoint can help them with collaboration. Are there any measures? Is there some way to measure success with collaboration, Chris? Do you have any idea how they can measure that?
Well, I think the successful project always starts out with what type of benefits are you really trying to achieve. You know, there are metrics that you can measure with collaboration, such as adoption rate and some other items as far as, you know, moving all of the information out into a SharePoint server. But we'd like to try to think about what are the transformational benefits that the organization is going to receive. And sometimes they're a little bit softer, such as, you know, how are we going to make sure that the experienced workforce knowledge is getting captured? How are we going to make sure that people are sharing specialty knowledge, such as information around regulatory information, those type of items, John?
That specialty knowledge is important. If I work for, let's say, Department of Treasury, and I want to find someone who spoke Portuguese and was a notary public, I guess there's ways to use SharePoint to discover skills within my own organization that I may not know of.
Sure, John. There's a feature called My Sites and Profiling, and what you can actually allow users to do is to enter their own, you know, we're going to call it their own internal Facebook page, and that lets them talk about maybe their skill sets, their specialties, their likes, dislikes, and if somebody in across the organization needs that specific skill set or their expertise, it's easily findable and searchable throughout the enterprise.
In a safe and secure manner.
Yes, sir.
Steven, I got to ask you about the seesaw, and this is pretty easy to figure out. The seesaw here is, of course, high collaboration, which we just discussed with Chris, and low security, or low security, high collaboration, low security. How do you get a correct mix here? How do you dance on that little razor's edge?
Well, you know, that's going to be a question that every organization has to ask themselves. It's not something that a consulting company can come in and hand you a template to determine how collaboration first is going to be measured and what kind of governance or controls that we need to put around that collaboration. But as you mentioned, it is definitely the two are inextricably linked in the sense that the more controls you put around your collaboration system, the less collaboration can actually occur. And what we like to try and do, first of all, is really empower the user. You know, the more that we can teach the user to manage their own information on their own sites, the more they're going to see collaboration take root in their own teams, okay? Now, that governance, again, comes in, for example, as Chris mentioned, with my sites. You know, we've got to look at technical governance, first of all, or operational procedures, as I would call them. You know, what kind of files are we going to allow? How much storage are people going to get? How are we going to scale this kind of social search out? but also kind of on a more visionary governance. You know, what is this for? Why are we implementing these types of tools? Why are we allowing people to have a Facebook for SharePoint? You know, what are we trying to accomplish? And those questions, really, what is it for? Who's going to use it? And why, are really going to define how SharePoint is used within an organization.
Microsoft, of course, has an annual conference every summer. Right now it's in Los Angeles, and they always have the big press releases and this new and that new and that. One of the big press releases out of the conference here in the summer of 2011 is the size of data storage for SharePoint is changing. And we may have some listeners who are interested in this technical subject. I just want to press you on this. And 1 terabyte to 4 terabytes, what kind of a change is in store here right here in the summer of 2011?
Oh, wow. Okay, so you're going to hit me with that. That's brand new. That was Sunday night, I think, is when I started seeing Twitter posts about the database storage size change. And it is very interesting. I've seen deployments, actually, that went well above the, I guess, the recommended 150 gig for a collaborative site and then 200 to 250 gig for a kind of a records management site. And with them kind of acknowledging that they will support up to 4 terabytes, that's a major change. My main fear with something like that is that people will go out and now assume that, you know, 4 terabytes is the de facto standard. But you have to be careful with that, because there's very strict kind of operational guidelines for what will work in a 4 terabyte environment. And kind of, I guess, the rule that you want to go by is that if it's a heavy read-write environment, you want to keep your content databases smaller. If it's primarily for storage, okay, static content or content that doesn't change frequently, then you can really grow your content databases much larger. The other thing that you have to consider in that type of scenario is what your SLAs are for the operational organization or the operational department in SharePoint. If you've got a very high or a very quick backup and restore time frame that you're allowed to use, you want to look at what kind of equipment you're using, what your high availability and what your disaster recovery plans are, to make sure that you can recover that 4 terabytes or 2 terabytes or 200 gig. You know, the CIO's site for an organization, you might want to keep small so that you can recover his information very quickly. Whereas a record management site, you know, it could probably be offline for a little while and no one would notice, you know. So those are your main considerations.
Chris, there's a lot of terms and concepts involved in SharePoint. One concept is SharePoint versus SharePoint Foundation Services. Maybe give us a quick little nutshell on what those two different topics are, two different areas.
Sure. Essentially, the SharePoint Foundation Services are the services that come free along with Windows Server. When you move up to the standard and the enterprise stack, you start to get more features available. Specifically, when you get into the enterprise stack, you get additional service applications, the ability to run Performance Point Server and other things that allow you to do integrated KPIs and intelligence dashboards.
What kind of press releases do you think we're going to see here over the summer about SharePoint, Steve? Anything else besides this drastic increase in size of storage? Or what kind of concepts do you think are going to pop up here? Maybe something with mobile devices?
Well, we've already seen Service Pack 1 released earlier this month as well, and with some interesting new changes, mostly on the functional side. I do imagine what we're going to see just as far as the future of SharePoint goes is a lot more of those service applications, as Chris was mentioning. We're going to see more and more people, I think, moving to a service application architecture, a module architecture that allows you to plug various applications in and out as needed, as opposed to a complete new server or a complete new infrastructure in order to support a single business function.
So you can take a safe and secure SharePoint installation and have modular components without having to rework about the whole security process of certification accreditation.
Absolutely.
So it allows for quick deployment of projects. Chris, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about Office 365, Office web apps, and maybe talk on this mysterious concept of the cloud, which Vivek Kundra likes to endorse, and find out where SharePoint fits in the cloud, private cloud, public cloud, expert-facing, all kinds of different clouds out there. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we're speaking with Chris Hornbecker, the president of Xgility, and Stephen Heister, senior consultant at Xgility. For more information, you go to xgility.com.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Profile America, Tuesday, July 26th. On this date, 19 years ago, the Americans with Disabilities Act became effective. Signed into law 2 years earlier, the goal was to guarantee equal opportunity for people with disabilities in public and commercial facilities. This included employment, transportation, and services at all levels of government. There are 36 million people who have at least one disability, about 12% of the total U.S. population. Those with vision difficulties number 6.5 million, while 19.4 million have problems walking or climbing stairs. Another 13.5 million have difficulty concentrating, remembering, or making decisions. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Retirement is expensive. You may need 70 to 90% of your pre-retirement income just to maintain your current standard of living. So how do you protect the money you've already saved from market fluctuations? How do you make sure you won't run out of money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Can't wait till Saturday? Then call me today at 301-773-3923.
Please join Jim Fleisig August 9th at 12 noon for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This program will focus on cybersecurity, progress, and best practices within the federal government. The panel includes government leaders from USDA, FBI, and NIST. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum Tuesday, August 9th at 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and online at federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by McAfee HP Enterprise Services and Red Hat.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Are your business's online activities, networks, and information secure? Bolster your organization's cyber defenses by attending the Department of Homeland Security's G1st Conference in Nashville, August 7th through 12th. The nation's premier cybersecurity forum allows government and industry leaders to share cutting-edge cybersecurity solutions. G1st is free, so register today at uscert.gov. That's uscert.gov. Remember, cybersecurity is our shared responsibility.
What Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Little of the sun's energy reaches any one particular spot, so solar energy panels need to take up a lot of space. That's why researchers are looking at nature for new ideas. Man-made solar cells are actually more efficient than plant cells at converting the sun's energy to useful forms, says Robert Blankenship, a Washington University in St. Louis professor. The problem is catching the rays. So Blankenship is studying light harvesting systems called chlorosomes in photosynthetic bacteria.
The system is simple in terms of the number of components that it has, yet it is very powerful in terms of light absorbing ability.
Chlorosomes are sort of like satellite dishes, but collect and funnel solar rays instead of TV signals.
The idea is not to put chlorosome complexes on everybody's roof, but rather to use the principles that we find out for how these things work to then design completely artificial systems.
More at www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, We have Chris Hornbecker, who's the president of Xgility, and Stephen Heister, who's a senior consultant at Xgility. We're talking about all things SharePoint, and we talked about just about every topic under the sun, from mobile to security to public and private clouds. But I'm kind of confused about this Office and the cloud and Office 365 and what the heck it's all about. And there's another concept here called Office Web Apps. Chris, maybe you can clarify some of these concepts for our listeners.
Sure. There's a couple words that your listeners will probably hear out there, and they are Microsoft BPOS, which is a Business Productivity Online Suite. They're going to hear Office 365, which is another version of basically putting Exchange, SharePoint, their new Link communication server out in the cloud. And they're based on the newer technologies such as SharePoint 2010. When you hear the Microsoft BPOS suite, that's based upon your WSS Server 3.0, which was your 2007 version. I think it's also important to note is some of these technologies are moving out to the cloud, not just for your federal listeners, but also your federal contractors, that we're seeing significant gains in cost savings for moving their infrastructures out to the cloud. One current government contractor that we currently work achieved over a 50% savings just from moving their technology systems into the cloud.
So just real quickly here, if I had to stop someone at the Starbucks and explain to them in 20 seconds the difference between Office 365 and Office Web Apps, Office 365 sits in a cloud somewhere in some server, who knows where, but Office Web Apps would sit on a local server or a server that's got more security. Is that the difference between the two?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Office 365 is delivering software to you as a service through Microsoft's cloud or through a dedicated cloud. Office Web Apps is about capturing the editing capabilities and displaying capabilities of Office documents on your dedicated SharePoint server.
So if I start a company called John's Donuts, I can sign up for Office 365. If I work for the Department of Justice and I want to collaborate in a secure fashion, I should consider Office Web Apps as part of the mix or a possibility for using it. Is that right?
Absolutely. And this comes back to our discussion on Shadow IT. Essentially, Office Web Apps allows you to keep the editing and displaying of Word documents, off Excel documents, PowerPoints, and OneNote notebooks. It lets it keep you in the browser on the IT's web application, so keeping that information within IT's jurisdiction.
Speaking of Shadow IT, I have a fun fact here. Washington Post, July 11th, they had a story on smartphones. One-third of Americans now own a smartphone.
Wow.
So I think anyone who's deploying a SharePoint site has to take that into consideration, because they have to provide information that's available from a mobile device. I just thought that one-third just in a very high number, especially in this shadow IT world. I want to go from mobile and shadow IT to the cloud and talk about the cloud. You know, when I think of a SharePoint installation, I could probably buy SharePoint and set up in a small company probably in a day pretty easily with a limited number of users, maybe in a small agency pretty quickly. But what about 100,000 users? What about 200,000 users? You two have experience with these large deployments of SharePoint. What are some of the best practices, Stephen, for scaling up to large installations of SharePoint?
Well, a lot of that comes back to, again, those three questions. What is it for? How is it going to be used? And why have we set it up? You know, some of the challenges that we've encountered in these large-scale deployments is that SharePoint can kind of take root and grow organically. It's been very rare that we've seen an organization that set up a SharePoint deployment, and from the beginning they said this is going to be a 100,000 user deployment. Usually what will happen is they'll set it up as a pilot, or IT will set it up, and then oops, they'll turn around and there's 100,000 people using the system. And so what you have to do in situations where you do have the opportunity to plan is make sure that you've got the right resources in place, and not just operational resources or technical resources, hardware and software, but also the right mixture of skill sets, you know, and the right kind of people running those skill sets. You know, we've seen when you get into an organization that large, you start mixing different personalities, different types of people across organizational boundaries, across contracting boundaries. Your main farm, your main installation might be in one location, but you're dealing with developers, contractors, different IT departments in different contracting companies with different agencies. And you have to make sure that there are processes in place that help those teams communicate.
If you read the literature on cloud adoption in the commercial world, Mixed bag results. If you read publications like Information Week, they talk about surveys with government CIOs. Survey was done in June of 2011, and they said that like 45% of IT government officials don't think that cloud computing will save their agencies enough money to make it worthwhile. It sounds hard to believe. I don't know. What do you think? A valid question, valid answer? What do you think, Steve? Think this is a crazy study here?
Well, no, I think it's a very valid question. And I think those government agencies are wise to really consider the value of the cloud. Because, you know, first of all, you really have to define what the cloud means to your particular application. Does it mean that you're running a dedicated cloud in Amazon or in Microsoft? Does it mean that you're delivering software and solutions directly to your end user? Or, you know, does it mean that you're just moving some services out into the cloud? And what we've seen is if you're still supporting on-site infrastructure, then you're really still, you're adding services. You're not taking services away, okay? And then you see a lot of people who are scared. You know, you see a lot of people who are worried about the IT jobs and are worried about things like that. And what we've seen is for companies that have adopted a more cloud-centric model, a lot of those IT resources shift. They don't disappear completely. You see less operational support and resources, but you see them shift into a more engaged administration resource. You see them shift into a more of a business analyst who understands the technology. So you do have a kind of a seesaw or a balance there between what is the cost savings and what is just shifted resources.
Do you think there's resistance because information technology folks who are listening to the show feel like they're losing control? You think that may be a consideration?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I've been in IT long enough now to know that it is a constant adaptation to stay lean, to stay agile, to stay up on the latest technologies. And IT people realize that, too. They know that they're going to have to adapt in order to stay relevant. I saw an interesting quote on Twitter recently, and I wish I could remember who was doing the Twitter quote. But he said that, you know, the ability to adapt is the most crucial ability of the 21st century, that relevance is not an entitlement. And IT people know that. You know, they have been dealing with that their entire careers. And I think that while some of them are scared, most of them realize that they're going to be shifting their knowledge of technology. They're going to be still working with people. They're still going to be working with machines, and they're going to find a way to make it work.
We might as well talk about the culture of some agencies. You may have different bureaus within an agency that have their own agendas, and they may operate in silos that may or may not resist the change to SharePoint. So this is another challenge in here is managing silos through SharePoint. Very, very difficult.
Well, I think that is another thing that we see that's pretty prevalent is data silos across, you know, multiple bureaus or agencies. And one of the goals of using, you know, SharePoint as a single application platform or that place that everybody goes to work and starts their work day, it's a place that we can draw in data from various systems and kind of present them with a consolidated interface.
And Stephen, that's kind of one of the trenches you've been fighting here, tooth and nail, is working across different silos and using SharePoint for information going even across different agencies.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I don't want to say really that I guess I've been fighting tooth and nail. You know, I mean, it's a challenge, definitely. And what you have to work with is you have to say, you know what, the agency is large and you guys are working with a particular type of data and I don't understand the data the way you do. I don't understand the business the way you do. And you really have to engage and get their help right from the beginning and get them involved, because otherwise you're building a system in a silo yourself and you're saying then, hey, I've built this system, now come use it. And that's not really the way it's going to work. What you have to do is you have to say, hey, we're building this. Let's establish a community. Let's establish, you know, some standards. Let's work together on that governance plan or that strategy to make this a useful system and make it better for everybody.
When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about governance and SharePoint. I want to touch on security, and then I want to get my magic crystal ball out and look 5 years down the road and see maybe where SharePoint's going to be heading or where Microsoft is going to be headed. Stephen Ballmer's made some statements here in July that are kind of interesting to see where Microsoft will be in 5 or 10 years. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Chris Hornbecker and Stephen Heister. They work at Xgility.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Defense Department has already started real-world testing on iPhones and iPads to see if they can handle data securely. Next up is the Android platform. A team at the Defense Information Systems Agency has sent DoD leaders an implementation guide for how Android smartphones can be locked down to secure information. When it's approved, they'll be able to pilot test Android devices in a military environment. To do that, engineers have to be able to disable cameras, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and other features.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology. Information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, chest,
arms, a jaw,
shortness of breath,
please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness.
It's time to take it serious.
Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath. Cold sweats, nausea, dizziness. If you know the symptoms and heed the signs, you'll be around for a long, long time. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911.
Learn a song that could save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
911.
Facing a new day, delivering services efficiently, improving citizens' lives. Booz Allen Hamilton supports the most important challenges of government, from defense and economic security to health and cyber solutions. Booz Allen's strategy and technology consultants partner with clients to deliver results that endure. Whether managing today's issues or looking beyond the horizon, clients can count on Booz Allen to help them be ready for what's next. BoozAllen.com/ready for what's next.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight is the Washington Regional Transplant Community. Organ and tissue donations save lives. 1,800 people are on the list for an organ transplant in our area. Many of them are children. Save a life now by registering to be a donor at the DMV or online at beadonor.org. Everyone has the power to save someone's life. Register now at beadonor.org. This message brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio. Connect with Federal News Radio wherever you are. Like us on Facebook to see the hottest news stories on your wall. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio. Download our free iPhone app. Just go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio. And now, connect to the radio station straight from your cell phone. Just call 712-432-6616. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for social media for details.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Chris Hornbecker and Steve Heister. They work for a company called Xgility, and they are the SharePoint guys. They know everything in the world about SharePoint and the federal government. We've gone from small deployments to big, to mobile, to how to hire people who have SharePoint expertise. What I wanted to do is I wanted to go up close and personal here. My regular listeners know I have my scientific survey here, and this is very scientific. What we're going to do is ask these two gentlemen 10 questions and find out who the actual nerd is that's sitting in the room here. And I think we'll know very quickly. Stephen, year of your first computer?
It was a Pentium. I'm a young pup.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think it was a 586, Windows 3.1.
So what year's that?
I was 13, so 93, 94.
Chris, how about you?
John, that would have been probably in the 1979, 1980
range.
The old Commodore 64.
You win that one. Steve, year your first cell phone?
Year my first cell phone. 98.
Chris? Yeah.
91, and that thing looked like a hand grenade.
You whooped him on that one. Operating system at home?
All of them.
All of them. Chris, at home?
At home, I'm only running Windows, and I'm also running some Apple machines.
You lose that one, Chris. Okay, Steve. Type of mobile phone you have?
Android.
Chris, what kind you got?
I'm running a Windows phone.
First ever, 223 interviews, the first Windows phone ever. That's incredible. I think even the Microsoft guys on a Windows phone, but I didn't say that. I'll deny saying that. How many apps do you have on your phone?
I have no idea.
No idea.
Dozens and dozens.
I haven't counted them lately, but I'm sure Steve's got me on that one. I don't have enough
apps.
We'll
toss that one up now. Tablet device, Steve?
I have an iPad, but I'm pretty sure my daughter uses it more than I do. So
that's not bad. Chris, tablet?
I have an iPad also.
Okay. How many social networking sites do you participate in, Steve?
Let's see here. I've got Facebook, Twitter, Google+. I guess those are the main three that I'm using right now.
Okay. Chris, how about you?
I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, but I would have to concede to Steve because he's actually helping me get on a few other Facebook sites.
Well, it's a toss-up.
Or social sites.
Steve, last book you read, paper or electronic?
Electronic.
Chris, last book you read?
Electronic, definitely.
I think it's 50-50. I think you're both nerd-ish. Maybe Steve may have a leg up on you because multiple operating systems at home kind of going to win this discussion. Well, we got to get serious here. Now we know who the nerd in the room is. I'll let the listeners figure that one out. I want to talk more about SharePoint and more serious issues about governance and how that works with agencies and how it works with security principles. Chris, any guidelines here for my listeners on how to use governance with SharePoint?
Well, I think the governance plan in the federal space is very different than what you see as governance in commercial. You know, typically when you think of governance from the commercial side, you think of, you know, how are we going to structure our sites? How much storage are we going to give people? And, you know, that all changes when you get into the federal space. You know, the governance model there, we have to start talking about federal systems life cycles. And, you know, specifically, if we're deploying SharePoint out of the box or whether we're doing development or whether we're doing integration with other existing systems, we have to start thinking about what are the boundaries of that system and taking into considerations like certification and accreditation processes, which, you know, make SharePoint deployments a lot more considerations, the things that you have to take in place.
So, Steve, I would think that just considering SharePoint as a solution, that one little checkbox in the back of your mind or the back of my listener's mind of CNA, certification accreditation, that's one leg up, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you can create a deployment that's going to allow you to check that box for CNA, the important thing there is not to rubber stamp it. You know, I mean, you could write a very limited CNA and only allow document storage on SharePoint and check that box if you really want to. But how useful is that? You know, you have to take in consideration a lot of the new features in SharePoint 2010 as far as sandbox solutions and workflows and allowing SharePoint designer access. And you know, if you're going to allow people to design their sites, are you going to try and maintain 508 compliance? You know, and then your specific DISA policies that you have to follow. There's a lot of considerations there, and I don't want to get the impression that it's too hard because it can be done. And once you get through it, you're going to have a system that's very adaptable and very very lean and very agile and can be used in a lot of different ways. But there are considerations you have to take to keep that that boundary somewhat broad so that the product is useful for people.
Chris, I've got a specific question for you. Our buddy Steve Ballmer, he likes looking to crystal balls all the time. Sometimes he sees the future. Sometimes he sees a chair-throwing incident or screaming incident. Well, what do you see SharePoint heading in the next few years? Look at this crystal ball I have in front of you and tell me, is it just going to be a cloud application, or where do you see it heading?
Well, John, as you mentioned, it is one of the fastest-selling servers that Microsoft's ever had. And I think it's due really mainly to the flexibility and the way the platform can be used. I think in the future, we're going to see a lot more service applications by Microsoft reside within the platform. For example, we've seen servers like Project Server, Performance Point Server be blended into the platform as using SharePoint as a delivery mechanism for various other pieces of software.
A couple years back, there was a movie about a ring, and they wanted one ring to rule them all. Is that what Steve Ballmer's looking at? Is he trying to look at one unifying platform that all your information can be found on a mobile device or a tablet or a desktop or a laptop? Is that what Steve's getting at, Ballmer?
You know, you really hit the nail on the head there, you know, not just swinging dead cats, but that's that's pretty much exactly at the Partners Conference this week in LA, Steve Ballmer was mentioning that Microsoft's future really lies in the idea that they can deliver a single operating system across desktop, tablet, mobile, and you know whatever else is out there in the future.
I just want to repeat this again. If you want more information on SharePoint, SharePoint Saturday should lead you to the event coming up in August. If you want more information on the company that these gentlemen work for, it's xglity.com. Just a couple minutes here. Centers of Excellence. They would never let me in a Center of Excellence, but you folks have worked with Centers of Excellence for organizations. Is that right, Chris?
Yes, we have, John.
and you all have to know.
Come on over and visit. We'll let you in. Really, the whole Center of Excellence or Solution Center model is really about ensuring that there's a resilient core and team built around delivering the SharePoint services. And, we could speak on that for hours, but it's about really developing the right skill sets, the right governance plan. And, you know, for the feds, also having the right procurement vehicles to get access to the right talent and people to deliver the solution.
I would imagine the people who attend SharePoint Saturday are people in the field maybe trying to expand their talent set. They may be good at business process management SharePoint, but they may want to learn about mobile devices as well. Is that the typical person that attends these events, Stephen?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say we'll let you in the Center of Excellence, but we'll give you limited permissions.
that's the correct answer from a federal perspective,
yeah.
Isn't it?
read only. Absolutely. I mean, you come to a SharePoint Saturday for a lot of reasons. You come for networking, you come for knowledge transfer, you come to meet the people who've been there in the trenches and feel your pain and know what you've experienced. This skill set, really, you have people who have, you know, these different skills, and there is no SharePoint Superman. You know, the community in SharePoint is strong because we recognize that we have to lean on each other in order to hit all of the solutions. So that's really why you go, is you see what it's capable of, you see who knows what they're doing, and you get a chance to really increase your skill sets and learn as well.
Organizations like PMI handle a lot of project management. Do they touch on these subjects with SharePoint as well, or is it completely different?
No, I've seen PMI and other project management companies really embrace SharePoint because of its collaborative nature. Project management is one of those things that comes down to communication. And if you have an infrastructure like SharePoint and you have a team that knows how to use it, then it can really enhance your project management.
Chris, just have a minute left. Let's say you're at the next SharePoint Saturday and one of the people listening to this interview and come up to you and they kind of have a coffee with you and they go, what two or three things about SharePoint would be best for a young person, maybe a 25, 26-year-old person, to learn about SharePoint for making sure they have a future skill set to use?
Well, I think that starts based upon, you know, what type of skill set they already have, whether they're a developer, whether an admin skill set, or whether they're a business analyst. So, you know, if they're on the front end of SharePoint development, they might want to learn InfoPath or SharePoint Designer. If, they're an administrator, a network administrator, they may want to go out and take courses in administering SharePoint Server 2010. And if they're a developer, they really want to get into learning about the object model behind SharePoint. And how do they best utilize that to create value for customers?
Swiss Army knife all over again. We're going to have to end this interview. Maybe come back next year and talk about success and agencies and maybe expand the whole concept of mobile and collaboration using SharePoint. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Live in the studio today, two SharePoint experts, Chris Hornbecker and Stephen Heister. They work with a company called Xgility. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.